5 years ago today, January 25th, 2011, millions of Egyptians, fed up with the dictatorship of Hosni Mubarak, rose up and took on Egypt's establishment. The revolution led to the popular election of Mohamed Morsi, a candidate of the Muslim Brotherhood Party, a party that had been illegal until the uprising. But true democracy didn't last long. Morsi was ousted in a military coup in July of 2013, and 1 year later, General Abdel Fattah el-Sisi became president in an election that seemed to repudiate all of the promise of that wild day of change back in 2011. Mona El-Ghobashi is a lecturer in political science at Columbia University. She's written on politics and social movements in the Middle East and North Africa. She says that for Egyptians, January 25th is a moment happily past for some, and for others, there will always be a longing to return to it.
One of the great untold stories about January 25th and its political results was it inaugurated a period in Egyptian history which was probably unprecedented of both national-level democratization at the highest offices that had never been contested before, of course, primarily the presidency, but also, and this is the part that hasn't received as much attention, a growth of grassroots, what were called political committees or neighborhood committees. And these tap into a very long Egyptian tradition of local committees dating back to the 1919 uprising against the British. These two parallel tracks were working at the same time, not flawlessly and certainly not without warts, but they were working. The problem was that with the coup in July 2013, both of those very contentious but also really productive experiments in political organization were shut down. And now there are what can only be termed as stage-managed national elections, and no talk, at least at the present juncture, of any kind of municipal opening elections. And even were these to be held, dictatorships are very happy to have municipal local elections to keep political competition at the local level, make sure it doesn't percolate up to the national level, which is what eventually ended up happening with January 25th.
Why did it work in Tunisia, or seem to work in Tunisia, and not so much in Egypt? And of course, that's a very, you know, scaled down sense of the complexity of both places. But what's your comparison?
The first and most obvious, but not the only one, is that in Egypt, there's a very politicized military, and there has been cultivated much by U.S. support. So having an entrenched elite that also has all the guns and the tanks makes a huge difference. The Tunisian military from the outset, partly because of its size and partly because of its history, was not interested in blocking the democratic transition. That's the first and most obvious one. The other one is the nature of the elites in both places. The elites in Tunisia quickly realized that they'd have to make some sort of compromise with the counter elites that had never been in power. The elites in Egypt, military included, but also many civilian politicians, held out. They thought that they could actually play this scenario to their advantage. So ultimately, democracy is a struggle among competing classes and factions. And the Tunisian scenario ended up being not exactly a success story because the elites are back in power in Tunisia, but the Egyptian elites were stronger than the advocates for change.
Before Nasser rose to power in Egypt, the country was not a hugely influential player in the region. I mean, it was certainly Egypt. I mean, there was no doubting its significance, but it certainly couldn't claim to be a mover in the region. Then Nasser proved that Egypt could do that, but of course he initiated and lost a couple of wars as a result. But still, that established the power of Egypt that pretty much stayed through till Mubarak. Now that's gone. Egypt is marginalized. ISIS is more important, arguably, than Egypt is, and the Saudis' argument with Iran is a much bigger conflict in the region right now than Egypt's arguments with Hamas and Israel. Will that ever change, or where are we in that?
Egypt has become eclipsed to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is now the major regional player on several fronts. And what is interesting and new is that the Egyptian leadership under Sisi is very openly portraying itself as an adjunct and the little sister of Saudi Arabia, partly because the Egyptian leadership relies on massive funds from the Saudis. So this shift in regional significance for Egypt was almost overturned by January 25th. One of the things that was scary to many elites across the Arab world and their allies in other parts of the world was that the popular upsurge that January 5th represented would translate into foreign policy. Because if you had Egyptians participating in politics, it would mean that their preferences in foreign policy would also matter. And that's what scared many, many, many people. And so there was a potential for Egypt to regain not exactly the Nasserist bluster of Egypt as the major dominant power, but some sort of a reinvigorated role and relevance. And that has been completely cast aside by the coup, again, very much with the agreement of the current Egyptian leadership under Sisi.
Would Sadat and Nasser be rolling over in their graves if they saw the situation today, or is it really not comparable?
I think they would be stunned at the way that Egypt has changed on so many fronts. Politically, I think they would be stunned by the level of popular participation that led to ultimately January 25th, because it made it seem as if Mubarak just let things out of control. And they would see a very changed country. Because one of the things that is really important to remember, despite the defeat of the revolution, is that Egypt has entered a period of political struggle, open political struggle, very high stakes, that it hasn't seen since it became a republic in 1953. So this is a moment of extraordinary upheaval, and we have no idea how this is going to play out.
So there's no clear evolutionary pathway from where we are now. We're headed for another surprise moment like the 25th.
That's what 25th taught us, that because it was an accident, a historical accident, nobody saw it coming, least of all the people who actually ended up making it. It's really hard and risky to venture any kind of propositions about where we're going. We could either see yet another revolution in the making, or we could see a very long period of very strict, violent military rule.
Mona El-Kabashi is a lecturer in political science at Columbia University. She's written on politics and social movements in the Middle East and North Africa. Mona, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.